You're listening to the Yacht Racing Life Podcast, the show for racing sailors everywhere. Featuring exclusive stories and interviews from across the world of competitive sailing. Hosted by British sailing journalist Justin Chisholm. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi everyone, I'm Justin Chisholm, and on this episode of the Yacht Racing Life podcast, I'm joined from Cowes in England by fellow British sailing journalist Magnus Wheatley, as together we try to dissect the second event of the fifth season of SailGP, which took place in spectacular style last weekend in the sailing mad city of Sails, that is, of course, Auckland, New Zealand. So Magnus, I think we've picked a really good time to jump in on this fifth season of SailGP. The opening event in Dubai wasn't the best, wasn't the most exciting, and I think we would have done a fairly negative job of extolling its virtues. But this weekend in Auckland was what the sailing fans, what all of us want from SailGP. It's what it promises to deliver: high adrenaline racing, unpredictability, thrills and spills, crashes. And some fantastic sailing from some amazing sailors. How did you see it?
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you just said. I think it crossed a commercial line, you know, having that stadium right on the waterfront, 25,000 people attended. And, you know, normally you can be a bit picky and go, oh, well, there's a few seats missing. There were no seats missing. It was absolutely packed to the rafters. And I think the great thing about it, okay, the Kiwis didn't do fantastically well. They had a lot of issues this weekend. But I think the great thing is that you can follow whichever team you follow. They're all capable of a good leg, you know, a good emergence from the pack, a good race, maybe a good regatta. And that's kind of what makes it so compelling, is that no matter who you support, whether you're supporting, you know, Brazil or Kiwis or Australians, you can come away with a really good weekend of sport. And I know we'll probably dive into the results, but, you know, look at it from an overall sporting perspective. That was very, very good, because if you watch sports like Formula One, it's pretty formulaic. The top teams come out on top. Here, when you look at the results, I think you can see anybody, and I mean anybody, can have a good race. And that makes for exciting watching, and it makes for exciting coverage. And I think they did a superb job on the execution of the event. And SailGP, I think I wrote the other day that it's good for the soul when it's like this. And it certainly felt that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And the big new element, of course, for this event and for the rest of the season was the introduction of the T-foils, which I wasn't expecting it to make such a big difference. I mean, the guys on flight control were really struggling with these T-foils. I mean, and it was breezy and it was bumpy because there was a lot of current out there, wind against tide for a lot of the time. But I mean, it made them look like they'd never sailed the boats before. It was like going back to the very early days of SailGP, when they were still learning how to sail with the old foils.
Well, the curious thing about the T-foils, they're supposed to be more stable. But I think because you've got with pitch and cant, you know, there was an onboard video capture of Andy Maloney. And it was like an 11-year-old playing a computer game. The level of control and dexterity that you're having to do all the time just to keep the thing flying was extraordinary. I definitely think what we saw, you know, in the early practice, the practice before the regatta, and then in the racing itself, was they're all just trying to figure it out and figuring out how to push it. And I saw an interview with Tom Slingsby saying that there's, you know, he observed a number of different people trying different things, windward flying and, you know, different angles off the start line and acceleration speeds and stuff. I wonder whether the T-foils in those big conditions produced what's probably Russell Coutts was hoping for. And I'll be a bit controversial there, because I'm pretty sure he was angling for the 103 kilometers, 56 knots, you know, record of the America's Cup with Ineos Britannia on that epic bear away. They got close, but they didn't exceed it. But I think overall, big success. There was a lot of press beforehand about the carbon wingtips being dangerous. I mean, I was at a yacht club do on the Wednesday beforehand, and everybody was talking about how dangerous the foils look, and if there's a crash, there's going to be all sorts of carnage and whatever. You know, I'm not sure. I think the sailors were probably well briefed beforehand to keep clear. There were a few close calls, but I think overall, T-foils, yep, big tick. And I think over the coming, Sydney certainly, but when we've got to see them in the upper end conditions, I think people will just get better and better and better, and it just becomes standard.
Yeah, we did see one T-foil-related incident with the Danes rounding, I think, one of the leeward gates and clipped it and pretty much destroyed one side of it. I don't think the sacrificial tip came off at that point. So I'm wondering how hard you've got to hit it before that comes off.
Yeah, I think it's probably there for, they certainly don't want those tips coming off if they hit something minor, let's call it. I think they want those tips to come off if there's collision damage between the boats. But yeah, I mean, it's a great thing that Russell has done. You know, these are built in Southampton. I know that factory has been working pretty much, you know, round the clock to deliver these. They've delivered them. The tech team have done a great job. And, you know, it's now just a case of the sailors getting used to new technology. And I think we saw, you know, if you go down the flight controllers, there's no kind of surprise as to why the people at the top are the people at the top and why the people, you know, in the middle of the fleet are there. You know, there is a technique to this, and the ones who could master it the quickest, you know, came out on top.
Yeah, I think for sure. I think they were all surviving, but some were surviving better than most.
Yeah, I think they all made mistakes. That's the thing, is it was quite a donkey derby in terms of technique. And, you know, even the Aussies, you know, they were off the foils a number of times. They were making mistakes. They just made less mistakes. And then typical Slingsby just performed when it mattered. And, you know, you and I have both seen him. He is extraordinarily good in high pressure situations and bringing it when it matters. And, you know, even down that first bear away on the final run, on the final race, sorry, you know, Slingers is just got that little bit of magic and a little bit extra, and wins the event, which is, you know, the form book suggested he would. I think Dylan, I would die on the hill that Dylan had his number on that reach to the boundary, but and should have held on for probably another couple of boat lengths, but that such is the small margins that they're dancing on.
Yeah, and I like your comments in your Rule 69 blog about Dylan, that comment he made during the racing, big picture, guys, big picture, don't worry, because the Australians are just match race their way past them on the beat. And, you know, that really is pretty smart stuff. But on that bear away at the top mark in the grand final, just to run through that, they had the Australians ahead and slightly to windward of them, overlapped. They had another little dig at them, having had a dig at the on the reach. But when they jibed away, they fluffed the jibe. And you just think maybe that was another moment for big picture stuff, and just bide your time a little bit and make sure you're in a good position to do that jibe and not having flustered yourself by trying to inflict a penalty. But that's easy for us to say.
Dead easy for us to say. I think you could feel the tension, and I think Dylan put himself in a really good position off the line. I think he knew, I have to say, I think his positional sailing all weekend was superb. He was always in the mix. He was always up there. And, if you put the boat in the right position off the start line, right position at the first sort of bear away mark, then you're in a really good, really strong, you know, and it's all about execution. What I could feel was a big tension. And, you might come back to the Luna Rossa Ineos race where, you know, you've got Ben sitting down to leeward and you've got Dylan steering and Ben going, take it up, take it up, take it up. And it's at these crucial moments where the very best perform. And, you know, I could feel the tension. I could feel the tension in my own body going down that, down to that boundary and that first jibe. And was it a miscommunication? Because, you know, we all know how good Parco is. We all know how good Ian Jensen is. Was there a slight miscommunication? Because for them to fall off their foils there, it was almost out of character in relation to what they'd, how they'd performed for the rest of the regatta. And I just wonder, and I'm sure there's a debrief and Robbie Wilson will be debriefing that one. And, you know, I just felt another couple of boat lengths jibe when you wanted to jibe, but they did have Diego Botan on the inside. Okay. Slightly behind. They may have been concerned there. I, you know, there was clearly something that went awry, and they'll debrief that and learn from it.
Yeah. It will be interesting, I think, for Sail GP to try and tap into some of these debriefs and just get a sense of how they do that, because, you know, these guys arrive for these events and they're very quickly out of there afterwards. There's no hanging around for a couple of days to to relax afterwards. And these debriefs, I think, often will be done on a Zoom call, you know, later in the week. But you're right, fascinating stuff, and great that we're talking about boat on boat action with Sail GP. Let's just look at the Aussies, Magnus. That team, we know how good they are. We know how many times they've won the season. I get this feeling, though, that Tom is happy to be back in Sail GP with a team that he's handpicked and handcrafted himself after an experience with being dropped into a team with the American Magic Syndicate in the America's Cup. And that's not to say anything. It's not that it was a bad team, but it wasn't Tom's team from the start. And I think he must have been really glad to be back. But he's had to make some changes. He's had people leave.
Yeah. Let's just break that down into a couple of parts. I think when with the American Magic experience, so much of that was predicated on decisions that were taken probably not by Tom, but by higher up, you know, a year, 18 months, 2 years, maybe even longer beforehand. And you and I both were in Barcelona and we saw, I think, Tom Slingsby really trying to eke that boat, certainly in that match against the quarterfinals against Luna Rossa. I mean, he was schooling Jimmy and Checo on the start. Goodison being off the boat wasn't good. There was a lot going on there. And I think he did as well as he could. Coming back into Sail GP, he obviously lost Kyle Langford, who's been absolutely supreme for the Flying Ruse or whatever they're called. And then he handpicked Chris Draper, who obviously was the coach for Athena Pathway. And, you know, that is a tough role to jump into with probably the world's best sailor behind you calling the shots. And you've got to coordinate with, you know, Sam Newton and Kinley Fowler on the grinders. You've got to get their trust. You've got to get their belief in you. Chris has done a really, really good job of slotting into that team. And, you know, you look at the post-race interviews and the post-race debriefs and chats afterwards, and they're walking along with a beer, and they do seem a really together unit. I don't think it was the smoothest of weekends, but it wasn't the smoothest of weekends for anybody. It certainly wasn't as super smooth as Tom would probably like. Two firsts and three second places. A fifth in the opener was a bit of a shock, I think. And then obviously they sat out in that final race because they had some issues with the steering, which their tech team sorted out really quickly. So, yeah, good strategy-wise. Did Tash Bryant do a brilliant job? Had there been a better tack and bear away from Diego Botan, that could have been very, very difficult on that final, in the final, around that final top mark. So I think there's room, there's definitely room for improvement there, which is probably quite scary for the rest of the fleet.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Chris Draper was an inspired choice. You talk to any of the sailors in Sail GP, and Chris is regarded as if not the best wing trimmer, then definitely, you know, in the top couple. Masses of experience, you know, an Olympic campaigner in his day. He's really just so valuable on the boat in terms of awareness of what's going on, his ability to mode the boat.
We haven't mentioned Jason Waterhouse in that, and he is no slouch at all, and he probably gets the MVP award for being the best overall flight controller of the weekend, because there were some shockers out there, but I think he probably comes out on top.
Yeah. And also, just as a final note on that, I'm looking at their crew list, and Will Ryan, Australian multiple Olympic 470 medalist crew, is on their reserve list.
Yeah, that's not a bad reserve to have, is it?
That's strength in depth. And while we're just talking about that, Stevie Morrison made a really good point. I think in the official SailGP kind of review or post regatta wrap up, you know, the Canadians were put out of the event by an injury to Billy Goodrum, their flight controller, after an injury in training. And, you know, depth in these teams is going to be important. You watch that racing over the weekend. I'm sure there is bumps and bruises and strains. These teams have got to start thinking that way now, haven't they? They've got to be able to slot somebody else in.
They have. And they mentioned that their reserve flight controller had only had half an hour in light conditions in Dubai. And so that, again, it's kind of squad depth, isn't it? And giving people who may not be your first choice, giving people flight time in the training and letting them, you know, get used to the boats, because it's very clear these boats are tricky to sail, and even trickier to sail well. But one of the shocking things, you know, Billy was hit by that wall of water as they kind of broached, and he was flung back and his helmet was smashed to pieces. Now, that's got to be something that the organizers are looking at, because that's a kind of a whiplash effect. I think he's done some damage to his shoulder and potentially some rib damage as well. So, yeah, I mean, it does show that this is a dangerous sport, and we have to acknowledge it as the sailing public and go, you know, crashes will happen, injuries will happen. And, you know, that is part and parcel of sticking carbon entities around at 50 knots. This is a dangerous game they're all playing. That's not to take away from the spectacle of it or anything. I think it's fantastic. But, you know, keeping squad depth, as in any Premiership footballer will. Premier League footballer will say, you know, you've got to have squad depth in order to get through the season.
Hi everybody, Justin Chisholm here with a quick message. We do hope you're enjoying this episode of the Yacht Racing Life podcast, and we wanted you to know that you can get more great content from around the world of sailboat racing on the Yacht Racing Life website, where there's plenty of free content to check out. And premium subscribers get all areas access to the site. Head over to yachtracinglife.com/YRL pod for a lifetime 50% off the regular monthly premium subscription price. Let's talk about the Spanish. They really proved they weren't a flash in the pan with that win in season four. They look like the real deal, don't they? I mean, all of that Olympic talent on there, and they always just seem to be really enjoying sailing the boat.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Botan, you've got Florian Tritel, Joel Rodriguez. They just look like a unit. They look like they're friends, and they look pretty determined that last season wasn't going to be a flash in the pan. I quite like their style. They're pretty understated. But, you know, look at how the consistency of their results. Everything was in the top five other than the fourth race when they got an eight. So, you know, 2, 4, 4, 8, 5, 3, 3. That wins you things. That puts you, you know, consistency. So, yeah, Spain is a real coming force in this. And, I mentioned in Rule 69 that when Tom Slingsby went on his epically arrogant rant about how the youngsters have got to challenge him. Well, I wonder whether he actually realized that Botan, Dylan Fletcher, Nikolai Sehested, people like that are coming, and they're coming fast, and they're putting together really good teams. And you know, I highlight the Spanish as one of them. Really, really good teams that are, you know, cohesive, going to make very, very few mistakes, and they're just going to get faster and faster. So yeah, Spain, big tick, you know, well done. Second this weekend, probably overachieved. I think really the Brits should have been first or second, but I am British, so I would say that. But yeah, great result for them.
Yeah, that Spanish team, I know at the end of last season, and I don't know how this has resolved itself, but you know, they were looking like a team that could be eliminated from the competition for commercial reasons,
correct,
not having a sponsor. And you know, they then went on and won the final, you know, won the whole thing, won the whole season, scooped the big prize, and I'm sure that helped them financially. But I think in that time when they were really up against the wall, that binds a team together. You know, it's that blitz mentality, yeah, that the siege mentality that we've seen with the Brits on occasion,
the Ben Ainsley mentality,
yeah, and it doesn't go away. You know, that is a tight-knit team who know they've got something to prove and are happy to go out and prove it.
Yeah, totally agree.
On that subject, how impressed were we with the Italians this weekend, sixth in this event, and regularly knocking on the door of the front of the fleet?
Well, I mean, Justin, you know, I'm a big Ruggie fan. My kind of view on Lunarossa at the America's Cup was that they missed a little bit of a trick in not promoting Ruggie and Guidoni into those seats, because they're going to have to do that now, and they will do that now. But Ruggie obviously wanted to go and do his Olympic campaign and didn't just do it. I mean, you know, he was absolutely supersonic in that. And really nice guy, very, very process driven. And, you know, bringing Carl Langford and Jason Saunders on board, because obviously Andrea Tessier, I think he was injured, I think.
Yeah.
Now, and Andrea, I rate very, very highly. He's a very solid, very intelligent guy. So yeah, Ruggie is a coming force. I look at the results, you know, the opening race when he got a third, then he followed it up with another third. I'm thinking, whoa, oh, right, now we're really into something. And then he sort of went into mid-table seven sevens, and he got another third and then an eighth. And, you know, he's just got to have more time in the boat. I mean, undoubtedly, this is a serious coming talent for both SailGP and for the America's Cup. And there's a lot of people in Italy extremely excited. If you follow his Instagram feed, you know, he is being feted by, you know, prime ministers and, you know, dignitaries, and he's attending all sorts of lavish dinners. Obviously, you know, he's so highly regarded in world sailing, and yeah, he's the coming guy. And he's the one that I watch out for the whole way, you know, all the way through this season. I think he's going to be good. And with Philippe Presti as their coach, he's got a superb canvas to work with that is going to just go on from SailGP to the Cup and back to SailGP again. It's very exciting, I think.
How much do you think the substitution of the flight controller made a difference? Because they looked so much more assured in much more difficult conditions.
Well, Jason's, you know, an Aussie, and, you know, big time he's going to be good in the wind. I wrote that I thought Ruggie actually looked more comfortable with Jason than he did with Andrea. But I do know that Andrea Tessier is world class at the very least. So Jason did a brilliant job this weekend, and, you know, I just expect great things from this team. I think, you know, you look at they've got guys like Enrico Voltolini. I mean, he's just an absolute unit on the grinding pedestal. So yeah, they are exciting. If I was an Italian fan, I'd be super excited.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed, just as an aside, I noticed that Jimmy Spithill who's the team CEO, he's also down as reserve helmsman, so it's a good way to put the pressure on Ruggiero.
Unlike Jimmy to put pressure on people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But the mentality monster that is Jimmy Spithill. Yeah, Jimmy. Jimmy's done a great job of this, hasn't he? He's obviously, you know, been given the finances, and he's brought Red Bull in, and you know, he's moving now into management. Actually, thought he was pretty poor at the America's Cup, to be honest. If I'm really honest with you, I didn't think he really got it all together. He was certainly better than Francesco, but a little bit unconvinced. There was a little bit of all mouth and not a lot of action, I thought. But yeah, you know, he's leading this team now. That's great. And yeah, watch this space for Italy. I would expect them to hit the podium this year. Whether they'll win a regatta, I think that may be a stretch too far. But they've got all the components and all the right people in the right places there. So yeah, it could be good.
Interesting to contrast a brand new team like the Italians coming in and already, you know, knocking on the door at the top of the fleet with the Swiss, who've been around in this fleet now for a while. I know they won a race this weekend and they look good for that race when they sell really well. But for the rest of the weekend, they were pretty awful.
Yeah, I mean, a first, a third and a fourth, fab, you know, great. You know, again, almost proving my point at the beginning that anybody can have good races. But then, you know, 2 10th places and an opening 11th, oh, sorry, 3 10th places and an 11th kind of doesn't really add up for me. Now, I am really impressed with Seb Schneider. He holds himself really well in the press. He actually looks like a leader. And obviously, you know, you and I have seen Arno Sarafagis and plenty of interviews, and he held himself very well at the America's Cup, but he grew as a person over the 3 years that we knew him. And he's now on board, obviously. Brian Metreau is very quiet, but extremely talented. I expected more from them. I thought they brought Matt Gottschall in, you know, Shrek. You think, well, okay, come on, you know, this is now, you're really going to push on this year. You brought two America's Cup superstars in, or three America's Cup superstars in, and it's just not clicking, is it? It's, you know, they can do it. They've got everything's got to be in their favor for them to do it. But I do expect more from them, and they've got to eliminate these 10ths and 10th places. It's just not good enough.
Now, the Danes are another good team to talk about. I'm a big fan of the Danes. I work very closely with Nikolaj Sehested on some Volvo campaigns. And I just love what he's done with this team. He's got the solid corporate backing from Rockwool, who are so invested in this team.
It's brilliant. It's
completely integrated into the business. It's not a sponsor sportsman relationship. You know, the whole thing is completely tied together. And he's used his resources very smartly, I think, and built the team steadily and gradually, I guess. And last season, I thought, you know, they will push on this season and be a real challenger for the top of the table. And then over this weekend, I was like, oh, guys, what's going wrong? And just when I was getting depressed, they went and won two races back to back and looked like rock stars.
I know, and they just revel in the uprange conditions. And you know, I wrote the other day saying, what is it about the Danes and big conditions? I mean, you go back to Elstrom days when he, you know, racing was being considered to be cancelled, and he'd take his fin out and blast up and down the beach and do five jibes, and then everyone would go, okay, we have to go. They are impressive, and those two wins, they weren't just wins, they were country mile wins. And there was an interesting interview with Nikolaj afterwards. So again, another person. I mean, these kids are holding themselves so well. And he just said, yeah, it's a case of, you know, learning to push the boats. And it seems to be when we push the boat harder, it goes faster. And yeah, we really enjoyed it. And there's a real kind of sense of joy in what they're doing. And like you say, I mean, they should be better, but, you know, perhaps, you know, you look at the first four races, 6-5-5-5, you kind of think, well, is that where they should be? Do they need to bring more rock star kind of people into those wing flight controller and wing trimmer positions? I don't know. I really don't have the answer. And I don't have a depth of knowledge enough on Danish sailing to say, well, they really should bring X in. But yeah, two wins at the end. They really had their tails up and they looked like a complete unit. Again, rather like Spain, they're not stuffed with superstars. They're stuffed with really good people who are a team. And that's probably where SailGP, you know, needs to be. A SailGP team needs to be.
So much of this weekend was about the starting, as we always see in SailGP. And maybe it's the tefoils, but the speed on that first reach.
Yes.
I've watched a lot of SailGP. I've never looked at it and gone, holy shit, like these guys are flying.
Absolutely.
It has to be tefoils, right?
Well, I think it's very interesting. So they, as they come into the approach to the start line, they almost do an arc round deep in the box, and they're all jostling for that, you know, the slingshot position. And then, as we've seen over the previous seasons, you're looking at the guy to windward who may be able to roll over the top. If you take the inner end of the line where, this is why my comment about New Zealand about starting, it rarely works, but if you get the execution right, you come in at the committee inner end of the line, the committee boat end of the line, and bear away, and then you hold the leeward position, obviously the right of way position. If you can keep up with them going into that top mark, then you've got right and water, and you can jibe first, etc., etc. But what we saw in Auckland was the massive slingshot effect. And now that could be the acceleration of those tefoils. It could just be the way that they are. All of the teams are sailing and sailing at such a high level that as you begin the bear away to the line, the time on distance, suddenly those F-50s literally come alive and you are rocketing along close to 50 knots and you are really hammering for that. And then can you imagine, Justin, being on the boat as the driver or the strategist with that many boats around you, four abreast going into that first mark? I mean, that is sailing on the edge. That really is. That's something that we haven't seen elsewhere. That's really amazing.
It really was spectacular. And as you say, on more than one occasion, four abreast coming in, but then with another flight of eight boats or what, however many, six boats, you know, just right on their transoms.
How do you call the jibe? Honestly, if you're Hannah Mills or Tash Bryant or whatever standing there, and like you say, you've got the boats coming up behind, you know you're going to decelerate through the jibe. You've got the boundary coming in. How do you have the guts to call that? I mean, that's big cojones there.
Yeah. I think, you know, it would be good at some stage with these podcasts if we can get some of the sailors to join us and maybe answer some of these questions, because
I
feel like more and more we're just going to be incredulous about the skills and the ability.
Yeah, that's a big point, is that the skills and their ability are rising all the time. And, you know, a few aside, most of the execution on those first jibes is pretty damn good. It has to be, because you're at such a high pace. I mean, obviously pace will take you through the jibe, and, you know, and getting the rack line down to the mark, thinking ahead and thinking down to the positioning, where you want to be, because there was a real split on that race course. As you look up, when the left-hand side seemed to pay because it was flat or water, and seemed to have an oscillating breeze, as in lifting breeze. And then the right-hand side was where the big pulses were. So then as a strategist or a driver, you've now got to make a decision about which side is best in relation to the positions that your driver has delivered you to that leeward mark on. There's a lot on. I have to say, I take my hat off. I mean, if you look at the America's Cup, it really is about choosing the, you know, to protect the right on those stadium courses, or those box courses. Most times protecting the right and then thinking about what you're doing at the top mark. You've got time to think about that. In this, that's Auckland was the shortest courses of the calendar. There was no time to think at all. It was full on banzai crazy at times.
Well, you bring up my next point. It was the shortest course they've seen in a long time, they said, or ever maybe. I guess that was a restriction of the area that they were allowed to race in.
Yeah.
Which incidentally, like, how amazing was it to have the race in so yes. close to the grandstand? And there's a shot of the Kiwis sailing towards the grandstand.
Just
amazing. We've never seen that before in sailing. Hats off to them for pulling off the finally pulling off the grandstand effect. But it was a really short course, and I felt it would have benefited from being longer. In the early days of Sail GP, there were more jibes involved in the downwind legs. It just seems we saw so many times this weekend the first couple that got away got around the leeward gate and they were off, and then everybody else was congested in their rounding.
I think you're right. It was one jibe and in if you were taking the left-hand gate, and that would you know, be the logical strategist course. But then what we did see is people, you know, taking the right-hand gate, and I'm looking down the course here, taking the right-hand gate to choose the side that they wanted to be, or maybe they wanted less sea state, and taking that right-hand gate gave them a chance at hooking into the lift that was seemed to be playing up that side. And do you take an early jibe and take a maneuver there, or do you commit to the left-hand side and basically you're going up the right of the beat and you're holding starboard advantage after the tack? It was a difficult judgment call. And then I think what we also saw on that leeward mark rounding, and there was, who was it? I think it was the Swiss saying that they had one where they got so sideways, they were heading basically straight for the rocks. They just didn't have the grip to go around. So if you mess that up on the left-hand gate and someone's done a jibe at speed and gone into the right-hand gate, you're suddenly looking, you know, you can take two or three places, which we saw a number of times happening. So yeah, on the subject of short courses, I respectfully disagree. I think I prefer to see it all very condensed action. And I particularly think when you've got 25,000 people right there, I mean, San Francisco, you've got quite a long, long way. Longer course probably works to give more people a view. But really, the 25,000 were crammed into that stadium, and they wanted to be entertained. So I think it worked. I think it worked, and it worked magnificently in Auckland. And, you know, you probably read what I've written lots of times saying, if that wasn't the loudest shout for "We want the America's Cup here," I don't know what is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's for another podcast.
That's for another podcast. Yeah.
Are you interested in advertising your product or service on the Yacht Racing Life podcast? It's really simple. Go to yachtracinglife.com/advertising to find out how. All right, let's talk about that home team. The Kiwis, they will have gone home. Well, they will have stayed home, disappointed with not making it to the final, not having a tilt at claiming their home event. They just looked out of sorts over the weekend. And I heard some chat that the boat wasn't working just perfectly. But again, as I saw you, Ro, there were several occasions where they were just so out of position before the start that they just didn't give themselves a chance. And maybe that was because of the boat. Who knows?
So they had, Blair had problems with controlling the actual camber of the wing. And there were times when they were at full camber coming into the start line, which is not where you want to be. And they're coming in high, so they'd obviously want less camber. And then they'd want to be able to bear away, get the slingshot by inducing the camber. They just couldn't do that. So if you know you have a wing issue, I just wonder what Pete was doing, because I wouldn't want to be coming in low on the start line, because unless he thought, if I can just stagger into that that left hand mark on the start line and then use the camber to bear away and try and eke into mid fleet or something. But the writing was on the wall right from the very beginning. And it was clear that you needed to be mid-pack or slightly to windward in those breezes to go. And he just refused to put the boat there and was always late to the stars, you know, and a fourth, an eighth, a sixth. Then he gets a first. So we know Pete's fast. We know the Kiwis are brilliant. I wonder whether Leo Takahashi was actually struggling with flight control, struggling a little bit. They'll never hang him out to dry. They said he's done a great job. He's fantastic. He's learning really fast. That could be the difference. When you had Andy Maloney last year, he's no fool. He's been trained through the America's Cup program, knows exactly what he's doing. Blair obviously is probably the world's, you know, right up there in a bracket of the one or two of the world's best sailors. They've got it all going on, but they just didn't put it together this weekend. There are a couple of points off. I think Pete looked a little bit kind of hacked off by the end of the weekend, and it just didn't happen for them. They'll lick their wounds. They'll come back. They'll probably win in Sydney.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they're like.
And on Leo, the bit that we never really take into account is these are young guys and they're dropping into a top team. It's a lot of pressure. It's beyond the natural ability and the skills and technique that you need. You also need to be able to keep your head and not succumb to the pressure of all this. And that's not a given.
Yeah. And I'm not convinced with Leo at the moment. And I saw him at the Youth America's Cup. He just felt a dollar short and a day late on things. Moth Worlds, he was right down the pan. The Kiwi family is around him. The Kiwi family is embracing him. You know what it's like when the Kiwis take you into their fold. They train you. They give you everything possible. They support you. He is on a big learning curve at the moment. I'm sure he'll come good. They can obviously see that he's got the pace, the speed, the mentality. He fits in well with the team. They like him. He is under pressure, I think, of everybody over the coming 1, 2, 3 regattas. The Kiwis need a very good regatta in Sydney and then on into the season. And he needs to keep showing that he's improving. Sam Meach, great trainer, will be on to him. I'm sure there might be some simulator work time. There could be a lot of Zoom calls, like you say, just to try and get him up to speed. And it could be a communication thing. It could be just learning the way that Blair wants the trim and the flight control to work, to understand Pete Burling. You know, Pete, I wouldn't say he's the greatest communicator. And, you know, I think it's on Pete and Blair to bring Leo up to speed with Sam's help. And I'm sure they'll get there. But at the moment, this weekend, they look bang average.
Yeah. And you bring up a good point about the communication. And I suspect Pete and Blair have sailed together so much and that team has sailed together so much. Communication's probably fairly minimal. I always think of a story years ago. There was a friend of mine got picked up on the beach at the J24 Worlds to stand in for somebody with Ian Southworth.
Southie.
For non-British fans, Ian was a multiple dinghy world champion and a really top name. So he got picked up to go sailing with him. And I said to him afterwards, like, well, what did you learn? You know, like how do these guys do it? And he said, I'm so disappointed. He said, they basically do everything the same as us, but, you know, they just go faster. I said, well, there must have been a moment where, you know, you picked up something. He said, well, there was one beat that we weren't going very well. And Ian just leaned over to the trimmer and said, give it brum brums. And that was it. And we suddenly started going faster. So I suspect there's a little bit of that kind of minimalist conversation going on aboard the boat that he would probably appreciate a bit more open communications.
I think also Liv Mackay coming into you know, on being in the strategist role, I think that's it's going to be a really, really tough job, because you are whispering into the ear, into the microphone of a three-time America's Cup champion. And who is Pete listening to? Is he listening to Blair? Is he listening to Liv? Is he listening to Leo? I'm not sure that looks the most cohesive set after guard at the moment. And I mean that at the moment. I'm sure they will sort it out. And the Kiwis almost certainly will be in the final come the end of the season. But they've brought in, you know, youth sailors, and it's just going to take time to bed in. There's too much talent in the team. You know, you look at Marcus Hansen, Lewis Sinclair, guys like that. You know, they've got the grunt, they've got the power. They've Pete and Blair are world class, and they've just got to bed in their support crew, as it were.
Yeah, and the real positive for them over the weekend was their ability to pull back quickly through the fleet. That, you know, they had some shocking smart roundings, and then even by the first leeward gate, you know, they're in fifth or something. So, as you say, great sailors, and I don't think we need to worry too much about them. I don't think they're losing much sleep.
They'll figure that out. And I think they had a handful of spanners all weekend with tech issues and problems, and it just wasn't going for them. And disappointing, because, you know, in front of that kind of a crowd, my God, that place would have erupted. And certainly, you see, when they crossed the line and they won, the place was rocking. Kids jumping up and down, people dressed in Kiwi suits, you know, everyone, young, old, all cheering, clapping. Wow, you know, that's great. And then, you know, they got a second in the final race, I think it was. And again, lots of support. I think they will come away going, oh, what a brilliant weekend. I wish we'd done a little bit better. But them's the breaks, as they say.
As they say. Let's talk about the Brazilian team. Martina Grail, first women helmsperson driver in SailGP. What are your thoughts? Because I feel like she's probably been very hard on herself right now, because they haven't exactly sparkled, but they're a brand new team, right?
Look, brand new team. Let's just take Martini. Is it Martini or Martine?
It's Martini.
Martini. Okay. So you put on paper Lee McMillan, Andy Maloney as your wing trimmer and flight controller. Honestly, that is your one of up there in your fantasy picks. You put people like Richard Mason in as a, you know, potential strategist, Kahena Kunz, you know, as in a reserve strategist role. You've got, and then you bring, just before this regatta, you bring Goody in.
Yeah,
this is dream team stuff. Problem with any fantasy league team or any team, it's a case of bedding in. And I think you're right. I get the impression that Martini is being a little bit hard on herself. And I do get what Hannah Mills said, that she's being judged. She's got to be better than the men. Just calm down. Just take it down a level. And I'm going to be slightly controversial. I think she looks almost haunted by the appointment. And she looks very uncomfortable. She doesn't have a comfort level. Interviews, it seems, you know, journalists aren't, certainly not SailGP journalists, are not trying to find an angle. The rest of the sailing world is not trying to find an angle here. We're all delighted that a woman has broken through and that she is competing with the men. We're all delighted. Please take that as a given. And what we're interested to see now is how you develop. Nobody is expecting her to win season one. No one is expecting her to be on the podium. I hope she does. I hope she gets to the podium. But the haunted look is not doing women's sport any good. If you compare it with the women that were in the youth, in the Women's America's Cup, you look at the Italians, you look at the Brits, they very much felt they were there by rights. They held themselves very high, and they just concentrated on performance. And I think that's what she needs to do. But, you know, when I look at the results, you know, 10, 9, 8, 11, 7, 5, 7. Okay. It's getting better towards the end. It was a little bit rubbish at the beginning. But you've got Lee McMillan and Andy Maloney with you. You've got all the elements to perform. You've got to get used to the speed of the boats. You've got to get used to the tightness of the pack. You've got to get better, probably better positional play, because they were certainly up there at times. But I just think it's a case of just calm down with the whole chutzpah around being the first women driver and just perform, because we know how good she is. We know the pedigree she comes from. And I think everybody is excited. You know, you see a lot of the sailors around interacting with her and they're all encouraging. And I think it'll come. It's just going to take a bit of time. You're in your first season. You've got a brand new boat. It's not easy. And she has all the talent. She's there by right. And I think this is, you know, with Goody whispering in her ear, I'm sure Goody will have, you didn't really see the Goody effect from this weekend. I think by the time we get to New Zealand, to Australia and beyond, I think Goody will really calm that team down. And we'll start to see the performance come.
Yeah. And if you were coaching a new team like this, you'd be talking not about results, but about just making incremental gains, just getting better.
Yeah.
Race by race, not making the same mistakes constantly. And you're right. They were out of position several times. I think they missed a mark at one point.
Yeah.
They missed a windward mark and then almost missed a leeward mark at the finish. And all of that stuff, you just, all right, let's just not do that again. Let's just think ahead and make sure.
Absolutely. Let's think ahead. Let's have a plan. Let's stick to the plan. Let's not, I just feel it just all a little bit, just a bit too excitable. But Lee very well. He is a solid individual. Andy is as calm as they come. It's all there. Just give it a bit of time. And you know, you bring Paul Goodison in, you know, you're very serious. You are very serious about making those gains.
Yeah.
Goody will make those for them.
I worked with Martini on when she did her Volvo race with Axel Abel. And I know she fundamentally doesn't really enjoy doing media. I think she told me at one point that her father and her brother had both, you know, kind of warned her off it, which was fun for me as communications director of the team. But actually, she's very good when you can get her relaxed and get her in the right mode. She's very good with the media, and she did an amazing job with the kind of the reach out we did with kids and sailing schools and yacht clubs. She was amazing.
But this is the point that I just did. I think she's got to realize that you're being interviewed by maybe Lisa Darmanin. She's not Magnus Wheatley. She's not going to ask you a difficult question. She's not Justin Chisholm who's going to, you know, ask the difficult questions and probe for an angle or whatever. It's very much, SailGP is very much visual media led. It's about promoting the sport. It's about putting on a good show. So there's really no trick questions. You might have a few journalists in the press conference, but as we know, there's very few yachting journalists around, and there's very few people who have a platform or an angle, a platform where they can exert an angle. Certainly the mainstream media, the senior kind of newspaper journalists aren't there with editors demanding, angles and storylines and whatever. So she's got a bit of a free pass with SailGP. Just go with it. And there was the bizarre incident in the first regatta where she came on stage and unfurled a piece of paper saying, work in progress, and it got a few laughs from the, but it was very defensive. And I'm interested what you say about, you know, the Axel Nobel campaign, and she doesn't like media. I'm afraid at this level you've got to like media. You don't have to like them, and certainly I don't have an awful lot of friends at the top end of the sport, but they tolerate you and they will take your question And they will, you know, you don't have to give the most amazing answers and be Dennis Conner and Ted Turner, you know, in 1977. You can just be yourself. And I think Martine just needs to realize her place as a sports person and get over that. If that's a problem to her, she needs to get over that.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the big problems with the Volvo was, as you go around the world, you do get a new set of journalists asking you, what's it like to be a woman sailor? And because this was the first time that women sailors were mandated in the race. And I think that was frustrating. There's probably an element of that which will go away now with SailGP.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. She will get that because she's the novelty. If Hannah Mills was appointed and was steering another boat, there would be two people there going through the same pressures. I wish that would happen, by the way. But she's got to live with it. She's breaking new ground, and anybody that breaks new ground all around the world, she's going to be asked very similar questions, frustrating as that is. So you have to go into that. If I was her PR manager, I'd say just go into the mental mode of, it's like a business person. You know, you get asked the same questions about your business by the same people asking the same thing at a slightly different angle. When you coach business people, you just keep them on the same message. Boring as it is, you have to say the same thing to 5 different journalists, 10 different journalists, and don't go off the script, and don't show that you actually think this is quite boring and time consuming and tedious. You know, you have to just keep the positive message there, because she's doing great things for the sport, and the sport really love the fact that we have a woman driver in SailGP. That is terrific. And the sport is behind her. And I think she's got a freer pass than most to perform. And she's got time on her side. She's got a great team. She's got great people. Concentrate on that.
Just one point, then we'll close off on Brazil. We're looking at it as an English language thing. I think in Brazil, there's probably an awful lot more attention being paid to her in the mainstream media, because she is a household name over there, and father is too, with his Olympic records. So maybe there's a bit of extra pressure there that we're not quite as aware of.
But would you agree with me? She does look haunted. She does look kind of, there's an awful lot of pressure there. I feel, as a journalist, I want to take that pressure off her. I feel this is not right. We shouldn't be putting her under this. And maybe you're right, there's foreign pressure, but as an English language media, as far as I'm concerned, free pass. I'm just excited to see how she develops and how much of the apple cart she upturns, because that's brilliant.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure she will at some point. We're not going to cover every team on this, because we've been going for nearly an hour now, but I do want to talk about the Americans, who really are really, 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 really struggling. They've had kind of half a season to get used to everything. They came in and cleared house, put their own team in. They've got good financial backing. I think they're pretty well funded and talented sailors, you know, one and all. But do you think they're just not good enough at this level?
If I was picking a USA team, I'd have Harry Melges in there. But they came into this very brashly. I noticed the most telling thing was one of the final races. It may have been the final race that they competed in. And Taylor was giving a rollicking to his strategist, going, I didn't hear you. It felt tense on board. It didn't feel that it was clicking. The grinders had their heads down. They looked really deflated. I don't know where USA goes. They had a good first regatta in light winds, and there's obviously talent on board. I'm not entirely sure of the management structure above Taylor and his immediate circle, but yeah, you got a question. As I said in one of my writings, when the wind is up, the tide goes out and you can see who's swimming naked. And I think USA is in the struggle zone. And I can't see, unless there's going to be changes, and SailGP, I'm sure over the course of the year, we are going to see changes, quite significant changes. There's going to be plenty of opportunity for sailors who are sitting on the sidelines at the moment. USA, I think, could be the one that changes more than most.
It's an interesting setup because, you know, the leader very much of that team is Mike Buckley. And of course, this is the syndicate that was Stars and Stripes that failed to put together the America's Cup team, but, you know, kind of died trying, really.
Later this week, I'm going to the New York Yacht Club, and I just wanted to drop that in. It'll be interesting to see what people there say about their USA team and how warm they are to the team. We will see, but I think there will be changes somewhere down the line there. Obviously, there's a great talent sitting, you know, out of the American Magic fold in Harry Melges, you know, a new force, a coming force. I'd love to see Harry in this. I'd love to see some of Harry's younger guys in it, but I think there's probably too much politics involved to bring somebody in like Harry at this stage. USA should be doing better, and they've always really struggled in SailGP, but there are times when they look good. I look at the results, you know, there was nothing really to hang your hat on. There was a third place, 7-6, 10-10, 9-9. Okay, that's not a great weekend. That's not a good weekend in the office.
No, I'd say they'll all be on the therapist couch for the rest of the week. Well, they're probably on their way to Sydney, or maybe they flew back. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we do have, we didn't talk about the Germans, but we can hit them on the next episode, sure, which we'll do after Sydney. I'm looking forward to Sydney. That's another great venue. We could get decent breeze. It's not guaranteed, but they put an island in the middle of the course.
Yeah, Shark Island.
Are they going to do that again? Or do
find, yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's all about going around that island, isn't it? It's a round the island race. Sydney's always a great venue. It's always the niggle between the Kiwis and the Australians. The Brits are going to be really pushing into that one. Yeah, there's a lot of storylines there that I think are really interesting, and I can't wait for it. And it was the 8th, 9th of February. I just cannot wait for it. I think it's going to be and as I say, I think, I mean, something we discussed in the preamble, Justin, I think SailGP is sort of jumped across a line of commercialism now, which is exciting. It's got our attention. It's a good regatta gets people's attention. That's got our attention. If it follows up with a brilliant, if there's a windy Australian Grand Prix, there's a real momentum to this season, and that's great. Should SailGP change the narrative? It's still a four-year-old narrative that they're peddling, and acknowledge that sailing at this level, you know, less about the spills and thrills, more about the technique, more about the brilliance of individuals, more person-led. I think there is a narrative change that probably needs to happen at some point, but it's super exciting. It's caught everybody's attention, and New Zealand were, as a nation, just showed how much sailing means to them, and we don't really see that anywhere else in the world.
No, we don't. I think Australia will come close to it, and hopefully we get great conditions for that. We'll look forward to that. But for now, Magnus, I think I've enjoyed it. It's been fun. Hopefully the listeners enjoy it too, and they can put up with our nonsense. And thanks for joining me, and I'll see you next time.
Lovely. Thanks, Justin.
That's it for this episode of the Yacht Racing Life podcast. We will be back soon with another top name interview. But in the meantime, check out yachtracinglife.com for more great content from across the sailing world.